pieces come and go, and I'm forever grateful. Come and tell me long and slow exactly what I wait for. Better times, yeah, better times, somehow I don't believe it. I built a house up long ago just to up and leave it.
Women make up 36% of the Habitat organization's workforce and are having a major impact on conservation across the country. In this special Women on the Wing series, we're going to explore their professional journeys, do some deep dives into their areas of expertise, and talk about what conservation means to each of them. I'm going to be your host, Ashley Chance, and Britta Peterson is going to be my co-host for the series. And so with this first episode, we wanted to just take some time and introduce ourselves to you so you know who you're talking to. Britta, tell us about yourself.
Yeah, so I am a Wisconsin-born biologist here in working for Pheasants Forever. I am a senior farm bill biologist in the southern part of the state and love working for PF. Yeah, so just a little bit about me. I grew up in northern Wisconsin, and I grew up with parents who love being outside, being outdoors. My dad worked for the Department of Natural Resources, and my mom was a very avid gardener and plant lover, and so kind of instilled both of those things in me, and so I've taken that and am a nerd for both things, and so really enjoy all that I get to do with my job and outside of work, and so I spent my grown up years hunting and fishing and camping and doing all the things that those of us that love the outdoors get to do, and went to school at UWSP, which is University of Wisconsin Stevens Point, and got my degree in wildlife ecology, and also got to play basketball there, so did a little bit of athletics and wildlife. But so what that did was I was busy doing basketball during most of my collegiate career, and so I didn't get to do a lot of fun internships or anything work-related outside of Wisconsin. So as soon as I graduated, I lit off to Idaho and spent 8 years in the Pacific Northwest doing work as a wildlife technician. So I got to poke grizzly bears, got to play with elk and mountain goats and all kinds of waterfowl out there, so that was a pretty cool way to kind of work through the my career and get to learn a lot of different things. And then I've been with Pheasants Forever for 5 years now, and love being a farm bill biologist. Back in the day when I was a little kid, my dad used to get the Pheasants Forever magazines, and I used to clip out pictures of pheasants and all the cool photography that used to be in those magazines. So I knew all about the organization, and am just really excited to be working for them and think that we do a lot of good on the landscape. And so I'm proud to work for them, and we have a great team here in Wisconsin and across the country, so I'm really excited. So that's a little bit about me. It was kind of rapid fire, but Ashley, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Okay, I am going to tell you about myself, but first, Idaho, what? Okay, for context for everyone, I actually, Britta and I just realized a couple minutes before we hit record that we went to the same undergraduate institution. We were both at the University of Wisconsin Stevens Point at the same time, or at least for a couple years. Didn't know that. And I had no idea that you spent 8 years in Idaho. That's so cool. I really wanted to be in the West. I've done a little bit of work in the West, but I always, as a younger person, envisioned myself ending up there. And I live in Tennessee now, so that didn't happen, which I'm fine with at this juncture. But poking grizzly bears, we might have to, I want to hear a little bit more about that, I think.
It was good. I mean, that's the one thing that I always tell students or younger conservation-minded folks nowadays, is to go somewhere else, go somewhere and try something different. And so I feel that heading out to the West from where I had never been before made me grow as a person and definitely helped me in my career. So yeah, it was great. And Idaho's a great place. They have a really good fish and game department, and I was treated really well there, so I can't say enough good things about it. So it was a good chapter in my life.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay, and then before I talk about me, so is this the job that you have now, is that what brought you back to Wisconsin?
Yep, I had I was doing seasonal work in Idaho, so it was like about 10 months of the year. I was 8 to 10 months I was going out there, and then I was coming back here to Wisconsin in the wintertime. And so this farm bill biologist position came up as a full-time year-round gig, so that was a positive, and kind of was at the point where I wanted to not be moving twice in a year. And like I said, it was a good crew to come into, and so definitely was a good step.
Awesome. Well, I guess a little bit about me then. I am from the Midwest. I live in the Southeast now. I live in Quail Country, but I originated in Minnesota. I grew up on our family farm, and this is obviously going way back, but it used to be a dairy farm. My brother and I were the sixth generation to live on the farm, and my grandpa quit the dairy before we moved out there, but he was just doing real crop, corn and soybeans, and then we kept steers and some hogs and stuff just for ourselves to eat. But I can remember there was a little pond in one corner. It was 80 acres in one corner of the farm, and it always had cattails. And you know, if it was like a really dry year, my grandpa would get in there and hay it. It's just red canary grass. But I can remember in the springtime in particular, we could like climb over one of the hills in the field and look down, and it was just full of ducks and probably geese too. I remember the ducks more so. And we would always call it the set aside. And for a while, you know, for a long time, I didn't think about it. And then as I got older and realized that that was actually a CRP contract in my backyard growing up. And so, I don't know, it's interesting. I had kind of a front row seat to the change of seasons, you know, being outside all the time on the farm, but really didn't talk about wildlife beyond, you know, ice fishing, deer hunting, that kind of stuff. It was just something that happened in the background of daily life. So my dad made me go to college. I didn't want to go. I looked on the list of majors and I was like, what is most like the farm? Crop and soil science. I'll do that. And after my freshman year, we had to do an internship, and I was coming up with ideas that weren't really germane to crop and soil science. And my wonderful advisor at the time asked me if I'd ever heard of Stevens Point and wildlife science. And I was like, no. And I went back to my dorm room, Googled it. There's a picture of somebody in a tree holding an owl that they must have been banding or something. And I was like, what? This is a job? Like, I can do this. So I immediately transferred and have never looked back from that point. You know, I did my undergrad at Stevens Point and then worked all across the country on different short-term technician positions, mostly focused on deer. I worked with mule deer in Colorado, a lot of whitetail stuff from Pennsylvania to Indiana, Wisconsin, everywhere. And it ended up, well, I went into the Peace Corps for 2 years. So I was in West Africa for a couple years. And I was working in kind of like the agriculture side of things, like food security. And as part of that, there's a native rodent, really is what it is. I'm not going to get the scientific name. I'm not even going to try it. But greater cane rat, or they call it grass cutter, it's a delicacy. People there love to eat it. And the problem is that a lot of times to capture it, they'll set fires, which burn up farms and have, you know, it's not like prescribed fire here. It's just kind of like light it and flush them out. Or sometimes some people will use poison, which obviously is not ideal if you're eating the animal after the fact. So, I endeavored to domesticate this creature, at least to the point where it could be, you know, raised for meat. And so I did some of that in conjunction with rabbit rearing and a whole bunch of other stuff, which was wonderful, and came back from that. I was fortunate enough to get a position at Mississippi State University, studying how hunting pressure impacts mature buck movement. So I spent more time in a deer stand than the average 75-year-old hunter, I would say, probably, trying to dart bucks and put GPS collars on them to track them. But that was a great experience. It was, I think, about 3.5 years I spent there in Mississippi. And that's where I met my now husband. He is also a wildlife biologist. He was doing his master's degree in the same program. And so He's from Tennessee, and he got a job here with the State Wildlife Agency about 4 years ago now, which is crazy. So we moved to Tennessee, and we've moved around within the state a little bit, but we live here now, and we have a daughter that is almost, she's going to be three when our next baby is born in May, which is crazy to think about. And we have been raising her in the outdoors. It's probably what we would have wanted to do anyway, but because we're so far from family, it's really the only way to do it if we want to get outside. So in the womb, she did everything from squirrel hunting to woodcock hunting to grouse hunting. I shot multiple deer with her in my stomach, and turkey hunted as well. She's kind of really into whatever is of the moment, if that makes sense. So whatever's in season, that's what she talks about. Turkey season coming up, I'm trying to like hide all the calls because she's just, you know, we'll go nuts in the house with stuff like that. But actually last week I was at Pheasant Fest and my husband sent me a photo. She caught her first fish. She picked out, yeah, they went and bought a fishing rod and he sent me a picture of it. And I was like, you bought our daughter pink camo. Like, nothing against pink camo for people that like it, but I have like a personal beef with it. And he said that she chose it. And I was like, all right, well, I accept it then. And she caught a tiny little sunfish. So yeah, big smile. But yeah, so we,
I mean, I feel like every kid needs that picture though, like of them with their little fish pole and their perfect tiny little fish, you know, that's like, you know, you need that.
Yes, we've got it. And right now in photos, rather than a true smile, she just does like this exaggerated grimace. So that's what, if you ask me to smile. yeah, so that's kind of us. We do have a bird dog. We have two dogs. One of them I brought back with me from Ghana. He's almost 10 years old, which is unbelievable. He looks like a big fox. And then we have a English Springer Spaniel who Britta knows, I've talked about this before, is basically a psychopath. He's great in the field. We did not properly desensitize him to our daughter, I think. That's an ongoing challenge. But yeah, we love to bird hunt. Like I said, we live in quail country, but unfortunately there's not a lot of quail. So to bird hunt, we typically travel a lot of times back to Minnesota for rough grouse or pheasants, or some combination of the two. But Britta, you do not have a dog, but... Or you have a by proxy dog, but you do hunt.
Yes, absolutely, yeah. I grew up, you know, when I was a kid, 12 was the age that you could start hunting, and so I would sit with Dad before that, and then been hunting upland and deer, turkeys, and waterfowling since I was 12. So it's definitely something, you know, when September hits, I'm in the field as much as I can be. So, and while, yes, I don't currently have a dog, at some point in my life, I will get one. And until then, I do have a couple of by proxy dogs or via family and friends that just are lucky. You know, I'm lucky enough that they let me tag along so that it all works out.
One of the things that I didn't cover is what my job is now, which is probably irrelevant. I am the Hunting Heritage Programs Manager for Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever. So I coordinate on a national scale all of our Learn to Hunt, Learn to Shoot programs, and then some other things related to bringing new people out into the field. And another thing that is germane and might be a good segue is that after graduate school, I had a short stint at a black bear rehab facility, which is a role of necessity at the time. And then I was fortunate enough to get a position working for Artemis Sportswomen. And so that was really a deep dive for me into the world of R3, hunter recruitment, reactivation, retention, and specifically through the lens of a woman's experience. And it was so personally rewarding to be able to have conversations with all of these women that were hunters and conservationists. And somehow I had made it, you know, hunting again since I was probably 13 years old. Up to that point, I had never hunted with another woman, except there was one woman who was probably in her 50s when I was a teenager that came a couple times to our elk camp. But other than that, I'd never hunted with another woman, which sounds crazy to me now because I have after that experience, limitless women to reach out to go hunting with. But yeah, it was really eye-opening, and that was one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about, Britta. You recently just had an event. I think it was held in conjunction with Artemis, right?
Yeah, we were able to, this is actually our third year, and it was our Women's Habitat Work Day. So we've done a ton of Learn to Hunts and other shooting events in conjunction with Artemis and our DNR partners over the last several years. But then this Habitat Work Day that we had, like I said, has been awesome because it's we've been able to do it now for a third year, and we've had such awesome turnout. Our numbers are higher for that work day than any of our Learn to Hunts, actually, or our shooting days. We've seen about you know, just significantly higher numbers.
All these
ladies that are excited to get out on the landscape, do management work, learn about power tools and how to run them safely, how to operate, and so that they can do their land management. And I think the other biggest thing is to get out with other women, especially in that environment when, you know, you're learning for the first time a new skill or working with a tool. We've seen so much excitement around that learning together and teaching each other during that day. And I think there's just a lot of ease and comfort when it's, you know, a big group of women teaching other women. And I think that, like I said, we're happy to do that teaching, but man, we get a lot done too. Like the amount of honeysuckle that we kill and buckthorn that we murdered during those days, is pretty awesome. And we've been working on, in Wisconsin, here, the state natural area, and then a Wisconsin DNR wildlife area. So we've working on public lands for those days. And so, yeah, they have definitely been one of the most rewarding events that I've been a part of for, you know, women's focused work, certainly.
Can you do a lot of the participants, like you said, this is the third year, have they come to this event in previous years, or is it generally all new people?
It's a mix, although I think every year we've actually had a majority of first timers. Every year, you know, some people come back, but we did ask that this year, and probably 3/4 of those attended this year were just first timers. The very first year that we did it, we had a ton of actually students from the university that came, and so that was some younger women that were part of the, you know, biology conservation world but didn't have any hands-on experience. And so, you know, getting to use those brush saws and you know, power equipment was pretty exciting. I mean, one of my memories from that very first event was that I was kind of helping this gal, you know, get going. We got her going. She was busy for a while cutting stuff, and then I just kind of, you know, went over to just check in, make sure things were fine, and she turned and looked at me and said, "If this is what power is like, I want more of it." And it was just so awesome, you know, because you could just see that when we'd started, she was kind of nervous about, you know, this big saw, this loud saw. And, you know, and in 15 minutes, she had it figured out. She got a bunch of stuff knocked down and just felt comfortable. And so that was, you know, that was, I mean, I'll always be able to see that look on her face of how excited she was to do that. So
I've had a few experiences that were maybe not related to power so much, but to being empowered.
Yes.
I think there's an event that I took part in as part of Artemis that's in its fourth year this spring, which is crazy. It's an all women's turkey camp on public land in South Carolina. And that, you know, and we've been to deer camps and stuff like that too, that Artemis ambassadors have hosted. But seeing some of the women there, I mean, we had women that had been hunting literally for 35 years, like expert turkey hunters there, along with a woman that I hunted with who was her first time ever hunting anything. And to go out with her and hear her talk about her experience and let her kind of direct, you know, where we were going. We kind of paired off and went into different places. And I had never been there before. I just drove around and looked for areas that had been recently burned. I was like, let's go here. And we heard some gobbles, but it was the last weekend of the season, super crowded. But But to see kind of the transformation for her and to, you know, circle up back at the campsite in the evening and just the conversations that everybody was having and no stupid questions, I guess, is kind of the feeling. I know sometimes in certain circles, you know, I've had wonderful, wonderful experiences hunting with men for the majority of my life. But I definitely, especially when I was younger, would think twice before asking a question because I'm like, I don't want to look, I don't want to look like the girl, like the stupid girl, which might have just been a construct in my own mind, but it definitely held me back at certain points. And so to see that, you know, that comfortability of being in that environment was really wonderful.
Yeah, I am right there with you. I mean, I'm in the same boat as you as far as, you know, I grew up with wonderful father mentor in the hunting and fishing world, and cousins and uncles, men that I love hunting with still. But I had not basically ever hunted with another woman until, you know, my like late 20s, which seems, you know, ridiculous now because I am like you, I have all these awesome friends, and women hunting partners that, just it changes a little bit in how you interact, I think. And I agree in some of the learn the hunts that I've run or been a part of, you know, to be able to watch these new, or like early in their hunting journey, ladies that attend those things, be willing to just throw that hand up there and ask questions, is, I mean, one of the best things I think of those events, because I know that I have been to other events that are, you know, co-ed where a lot of times the ladies stay in the background, and that's, I think, just kind of the way it rolls. And so I know, you know, the organization and those of us that put on these events, I think it's really important to have them out there because there's a lot of women hunters out there that are super passionate and just want to get out there. So it's really important.
Yeah, definitely. One of the, this makes me think about, again, Pheasant Fest. I'm coming off of the Pheasant Fest high. It was just, I guess not even a week ago, it was last weekend. When this airs, it'll be a few weeks. But this year we started something that we call the Women on the Wing Lounge. And we just kind of wanted to dedicate a space to kind of create that environment that we've been talking about here for women, where they can interface with each other, you know, kind of network, meet one another. And also we had women of note, we called them, cycling through. So we had women who were expert shooting instructors that own their own shooting instruction company. You know, everything else. I'm trying to think of all the other women that were in there. There was a really amazing woman that works with Doug Duren. Her name's Lindsay Braun. She's a forager and does a bunch of other incredible things. We had her in there. I think we had our own staff in there to talk about hosting events for women. And also, I think Renee Buck was in there doing just kind of like the Habitat Help Desk, but for, you know, any woman that came through that had property that she wanted to talk about. So it was really cool. We learned a lot. I think hopefully we're going to replicate that in future years and make it even better. But being at Pheasant Fest was amazing to see all the women that were there. You know, a lot of them were there with male partners, which is wonderful. And I tried to tell them about the lounge, be like, hey, there's a space, you know, there's a space for you. You can go check it out, hang out, you know. And some of them did, which was really great to see. We had talks on specifically the Path to the Upland stage. We had a professor come from South Dakota State University that talked about kind of women's involvement in hunting, but like the history of women. And I should have pulled up her presentation to look at the exact date, but one of the really interesting things I pulled from that is that the kind of the myth of man the hunter and woman the gatherer, you know, that's what, you know, I've always heard in popular culture and probably even in school, to be honest. But I think last year or the year before, the remains of this hunter were found in, I want to say, modern day Peru, somewhere in South America. And they were buried with a bunch of hunting regalia, tools, bones, like really like a prestigious hunter is what all of that conveyed. And it was a 17-year-old woman. And yeah, and it was interesting because it was obviously this wasn't something that this person just did in their spare time or that the community relegated to being like a hobby. And that's actually the oldest known, the oldest discovery of a hunter we have, period. And it's a woman. And so, and she went on to enumerate a lot more, and you know, many more interesting statistics about women that have hunted through history, and like what percentage of them hunted with dogs, which is really interesting because I feel like probably way back in the day, hunting with a dog maybe enabled you to also hunt with kids in tow. So yeah, I don't know, just kind of rethinking that historical narrative and trying to figure out where we fit into modern day hunting, and not just, I mean, we're focusing on hunting now, but also just into conservation writ large. In the opening of this episode, we talked about our organization being 36% women, and that's across, you know, even our field team. So our biologists and those folks, the percentage of those employees that are women are, is really comparable to that 36%. And so, yeah, I think it's just something that I'm really excited to talk about and to share those stories. Because when you're young, or even when you're just starting something out at any age, it can be really not just inspiring, but helpful to see yourself reflected in kind of that, the end result.
Yeah, absolutely. I think our organization has a lot of really cool ladies that are doing a lot of really neat thing to inspire that next generation when they can see them. So I think I am excited as well to get to share their stories. I was just going to say too, just thinking about kind of that historical context, which my story is not as old as that, but a couple years ago, Idaho had a anniversary of their department, and so their regs booklets came out with these old historical photo, and the upland photo that they chose to use for that year was these four ladies from like 1912 or something like that, that were just decked out in their gear of with dead birds hanging everywhere, and they just looked so classy and just like, you know, had obviously been really successful. So even just in that kind of recent history, you know, there was a lot of ladies in the field. And so that thing is on my cube wall. So I get to, you know, I'll look at that and just, there's a lot of ladies to be inspired, whether it's in the field or in the professional setting.
Yeah, no doubt. Okay. So in that vein, who have you had the privilege to be inspired by? Maybe, I guess, personal or professional.
Yeah.
But I'm really interested in the professional.
Yeah, sure. I think when I started with Fish and Game in Idaho, I was in a world of where the biologists that were in that northern part of the state were a lot of women. And so when I started my professional career, I worked as the senior technician was a lady, and her and I did everything on the wildlife area. So whatever needed to get done, we drove the tractors, we did all the farming, we did all the wildlife surveys, we did, you know, any maintenance, mechanical stuff. And so, yeah, Lisa was definitely just, I couldn't, you know, again, here's this lady that was just doing everything. And so that very first job out of college, that's who I got to work with right away and look up to, and was just, you know, kind of flabbergasted in some ways of like, look at this lady, she is doing everything. And she taught me so much. And then again, as the like biologists that were out there in the wildlife world doing backcountry work, it was a lot of women. And so it was like, yeah, there was no question about whether I could do any of that, you know, as part of my job. And then when I came here and took a job with Pheasants Forever, again, I feel super fortunate. I came into a team that was actually more women on the team, and they all kind of bring their own spice, but they just were super dedicated to the job, had kind of different backgrounds, but man, for being mentors and just being willing to help and kind of coach me up to get me along, they were so incredible. And some of them have left and joined different other organizations, but we're still super close, and they continue to, you know, send our group message pictures of plants or bugs or owls or birds, you know, whatever. And so it's like, you know, they're still in my life, and no matter, even if it's, you know, I don't see them on a daily basis. Here in Wisconsin, we have a pretty tight, I think, conservation community, and so that is also really, really rewarding. Our the Department of Natural Resources has a ton of biologists as well that are women that I'm close with, and so just knowing the work that they do, you know, to get all the work done on the landscape always inspires me. And the lucky thing is we get to partner on a lot of the events that we put on, and so whenever we do these events, it can become a lot easier when, you know, there's three or four of us from different organizations that are bringing a little something, so it's not one person having to do everything. And so not only do for me, like, do I get a reward from watching our attendees learn, but I am rewarded by just being supported, and I get to support these other awesome women as well. And so, yeah, I mean, maybe I, again, like, live in this utopia of, like, these really super strong, powerful women, but I don't think so. They're out there, and I think they're in, you know, a lot of places that, man, there's some cool ladies out there, so.
Yeah, no doubt. I couldn't have said it better myself. Okay, something else I want to ask you about, because my job is, at this point, and for a while has been hunting, and that's kind of, I'm used to talking about that. I do have formal education in habitat management, but I haven't practiced for a number of years. So I want to hear not the government acronyms, but I want to hear more about your job and, like, what, you know, after such a long stint in Idaho doing crazy cool stuff and then coming back to Wisconsin, obviously you talk about, you know, these events and stuff that you are part of, but what is kind of your bread and butter that you deal with now?
What a great question. Yeah, I can get to talk about that a little bit, which is exciting too. So I spend most of my time working with private landowners, trying to do habitat improvement or work on private lands. And I, of course, am, you know, going to toot my horn and say that I live in the best part of Wisconsin because I live down in the Driftless, which is a crazy landscape. We have a ton of really rare and unique habitats, and so it presents a challenge and a good learning opportunity for me to try to help folks, which is exciting. You know, but we utilize government programs to help cost share something. Sometimes we just provide technical assistance, and other times it's just education. So I get to go out and walk people's properties with them to kind of make that advice, whether it is a cost share situation or they just need some help finding a contractor or just some education. And I really think that some of the best visits that I've had is where folks don't know anything or they know very little. They think this is something cool, this property we have, but we get to go and look at it. I mean, we've found remnant prairies, we've found oak savannas, we've found, you know, a lot of these different types of rare habitats, bluffs, rock faces, you know, that they just thought were cool, but then when you start diving into them, you see all these rare plants and rare critters and those types of things. And so, you know, that's kind of where we come in and try to just help them get to where, if they want to do restoration work or habitat improvement, we can help them, however that is. And I would say, too, that, you know, I generally tend to work with, like, recreational or landowners to some extent. I mean, we have a lot of biologists that work with traditional producers and farmers, and I do as well, but a good handful of my folks tend to be kind of these distinct kind of recreational landowners. And I would say that it surprises me, not as much anymore, but when I first started, how many of them are women and generally tend to be actually older women, retired women that are still out there running the brush saw, running the you know, equipment to get some of that stuff done. So that also has been a really cool experience. And a lot of times it's not just them, you know, it's with a partner, a male partner sometimes, but man, the amount of work that's getting done out on the landscape, I think we don't know about. And so again, sometimes these visits and stuff that I get to do, I not only get to see really cool properties and try to help make them better, but I also get to meet a lot of really cool landowners that are doing great things.
Oh, that sounds awesome. I'm envious. I don't get to go outside that much. I know you spend a lot of time doing paperwork, but that just sounds so wonderful to go walking through a patch of remnant prairie or something similar, an oak savanna. Yeah, all that. Amazing. So recently, I think you've had a big success. If I'm remembering right, don't you have your largest contract yet? Or maybe it was just like a really big one. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so part of my job is, like I said, working with government programs. So I spent a lot of time with the Conservation Reserve Program. And so that is a kind of our biologist bread and butter. And yes, I did just get a big old field here in southern Wisconsin. It was about, which may sound like peanuts to some other locations, but in Wisconsin, 165 acre, one field, which was pretty exciting. And it's all going to be turned into native prairie. And so I'm really excited to work with those guys. And, you know, it's a kind of a ridgetop with a lot of slope to it. So again, we're, you know, it's kind of marginal farmland. And so putting it into native prairie seems the best use for a lot of different, you know, erosion, water quality, and wildlife habitat. So that's, I'm super pumped about it.
Yeah, that's very exciting. It's nice when you get those tangible wins, yeah. I think, to reflect on as you go through your work.
Right, yeah.
Well, I think this is kind of what we wanted to do with this first episode, is just introduce ourselves and kind of the concept and why we're doing this. One of the things that I didn't talk about was a mentor of mine that I really looked up to, still do. She was a supervisor of mine, my first supervisor when I worked at Artemis, Marsha Brownlee, and she pushed me in a lot of ways, and also, I don't even know how to articulate, she ended up leaving that role to get a degree to become a therapist. So if that tells you anything, it was very easy to talk to her and kind of, you know, we could shoot the shit together, but also I felt like she was a really wonderful mentor for exploring this, you know, side of being a professional that I hadn't really ever had words for previously. But one of the things she did when I started, there was a podcast, there still is an Artemis podcast, and she just kind of gently threw me into the fire of hosting it, and that gave me the impetus when coming into this role to kind of pitch this idea and talk to you about it. And it's kind of brought me here. I'm sure if I hadn't had that experience, I would have never thought myself worthy of sharing my thoughts on a recorded platform. But yeah, so I think mentorship, great. And we have her to thank in a roundabout way for this episode. Okay, so I think we can kind of close with that and tee up our next episode that is going to feature not just us, but another woman from our organization. Before we go, I think we can kind of go back and forth and talk about either our most recent adventure or what's coming up for each of us. Britta, what's coming up for you?
What's coming up is I get to go out on a prescribed fire on Sunday. So I am super pumped about that, which is, you know, by the time this airs, it'll be done and over with. But in the current moment, I am so excited about it. And then also, yeah, just getting excited for turkey season coming up. So that'll be, a busy time, but super thrilling. So I'm excited.
Are you the kind of turkey hunter that like thinks about turkey season when it's not happening? Like one of these people that's like ill with it?
I am not ill with it. Although there are a lot of turkeys here, so they're kind of, they're in the periphery a lot of the year, you know, so you're like, oh, well, you'd think when the spring rolls around and you can't find them, like, what the heck happened? And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, there's 40 in this one field right where I was hunting. So they are actually there. So maybe not ill with it, but definitely they're it's around. So
it's a thing. It's a thing. For sure. Oh, that's great. Okay, well, my most recent adventure, aside from Pheasant Fest, which was an adventure, yes, a good one, we actually spent some time as a family to go shed hunting and found some huge antlers, whitetail, obviously, and it was super fun, and I was even able to spot, like, a few tiny little, like, forks and, you know, like, lead my daughter to them. So it was like the OG Easter egg hunt.
You gotta be real good to find the little ones, man. So that's high end right there.
It was, yeah. Everyone was much more impressed with the big ones, but I thought the same thing. I was like, you need to really be dialed in to find these little jobs. Yep. But yeah, that was a lot of fun. And obviously turkey season's coming up. I am, let's see, when turkey season opens, I will be 34-ish weeks pregnant. I've done it before. I don't know how much I'm going to do it this go around. We'll see. We don't have private land to hunt, so I can't hunt from a blind, and that would be probably the only way that I would bring my daughter turkey hunting. But TBD, I don't know. Maybe something crazy will happen. Maybe we can get a babysitter and I can just go hunt by myself. But yeah, so stay tuned for the results of that, I guess. Yeah, I guess, Britta, any closing remarks? Otherwise, I can close this out and get ready for the next one.
Yeah, I think we're just excited, like we said, to share some stories from the ladies in our organization and get to tell our story, the Pheasants Forever story, about why this organization is so good. So that's what we're looking forward to with this podcast.
Yeah, and we will say that if you like this episode, if you're interested in hearing more topics kind of in this vein, please submit that feedback to the powers that be, because that will help us to know whether or not we should continue to pursue this. So with that, thanks for listening. You can join us next month for a conversation with Allie Barth, who is a farm bill biologist in Iowa. Am I remembering that correctly? Yep. Okay. Britta's telling me yes. And then subsequently other really amazing women with Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever.